Hello, and welcome to Kids Get Acquainted with the Internet, a Girl Meets World podcast. I'm Dan.
And I'm Keith, and today we're interviewing David Thomas Jenkins, a.k.a. Kermit.
Thank you for being on today.
Thank you for having me. And when you put it like that, Kermit is such a fantastic introduction.
It's a weighty and noble title.
Do you want to go? Do you want to go by David? Is that should we should?
Yeah, David. David's great. Yeah.
All right, great. All right. So before we really jump into the nitty gritty, can you tell us a little bit more about your life outside of acting? What are some of your hobbies? TV shows that you like? Anything like that?
Sure. Outside of acting, I'm an avid ocean goer, so anything involving the ocean, sailing, surfing. My fiance and I are big scuba divers as well. So
very interesting. That's cool.
Any chance to be in the water, and I'm really happy. Other than that, I do a lot of like martial arts training. I love to read. Pretty quiet most of the time. So.
Those are great answers. That's really cool.
Yeah. TV shows. I really like. What's happening with Fargo? I think that's really good writing right now. There's a small show on Sundance Channel called Rectify that I've seen the first two seasons of that I thought was really, really fantastic.
I've heard great things about that.
It's really good, man. The writing is just like it's a slow burn, and it's, really, really pretty heavy and great character development. So yeah. Really good stuff there. And then obviously, like Game of Thrones and Archer and, all of the big ones. Yeah. Great. I mean, other than Girl Meets World.
Yeah. And what's that one show? There's that one show on Disney Channel that everybody's talking about.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. We'd like to kind of get a little backstory from you. So, how did you get into acting, and what made you decide to pursue it professionally? Because obviously, so you're here in this great, mighty role of Kermit. So you must have worked really hard to get here.
Oh, the mighty Kermit. Yeah. Ever since I was really young, I had a really fantastic teacher. I grew up in a really small town in South Carolina, and I went to drama camps when I was younger. And the same teacher that did that was my high school drama teacher, and he's just a really inspiring individual, and really connects with kids, and really knows how to bring out the best in them. Whether that's whether they're lighting designers or have the affinity for writing or acting, and he really pushed me a lot. That's what really developed my love of acting. And then, of course, pursuing it in college, and I had more great teachers. So I guess the theme of what I'm saying is great teachers are what pushed me into where I am now and really made me love what I do. So
that's very in keeping with Boy Meets World and Girl Meets World.
Absolutely. It falls right back in with the Boy Meets World, Girl Meets World overall theme as well. Yeah. Great teacher.
I also find that fascinating. That's also just about what J.B. Gaynor said.
Yeah.
That it was true. The great teachers that drove him to
we interviewed him a couple of weeks ago. But
yeah, I mean, they really make all the difference.
Yeah. So, continuing on, we have kind of a silly follow-up there. We were interested in about your first big role on a Dawson's Creek as Gawk Kid, we noticed tonight.
Yeah, we were going through trying to do a little background research, and we saw...
No, it's okay, it's okay. I was just going to say, there's some things, you hope you don't ever really have to talk about. I'm just kidding. It was a great experience. It was a small role, and the actor that I played off of, what was his name? The teacher... Kerr Smith was really really inspiring guy, and really encouraged me to push things a little further. And this being my first time, I was on a big television set. That was really, really nice to be treated that way. And it's a lot like the Girl Meets World family, those guys have been working together for, six, seven seasons, something like that when I was there. So yeah, it was a really easy place to kind of fit in, because everybody would work so well together.
Yeah, and so were you originally going out for television specifically? Were you aiming for more theater or movies or?
Yeah, I mean, I studied theater in college, and when I was finishing college, it was you either go to New York or Chicago or London or whatever for theater, or you go to Los Angeles to pursue. TV and film, and I'm not a cold weather person for the most part. So that kind of made my decision for me. But I'd been doing theater since I was a kid, and I just kind of wanted to try the other side of the camera side of storytelling for a bit. So
cool.
Will you ever be reprising your jock kid character for the reunion show?
No, unfortunately, I don't think so. Oh, were they to call me and say we're doing a Dawson's Creek reunion, we want jock kid, jock kid back on top billing, I would definitely.
Yeah,
nice.
Could you tell us a little bit about the audition process for Girl Meets World? Like, what attracted you to the role? If you remember anything about, like, what exactly they were looking for? You know, like, what were they calling for on the cast call?
It was pretty much what you saw. They wanted somebody, as far as I'm remembering correctly, they wanted somebody who was, you know, kind of charming, but like a little disheveled and not quite put together. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like the, you know, pretty much what Kermit was. Like, you know, he was a nice, charming guy. Obviously not the best guy in the world, but yeah. You know, somebody who kind of could get by on their charm, but wasn't very put together. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. What was it that attracted you to the role specifically?
Well, you know, honestly, when I got, I grew up watching Boy Meets World, but I hadn't seen any of Girl Meets World. And when I got the audition, it was the writing. I mean, I was floored about, I remember, and I know this is a kind of a shift in tone in the show towards some more serious subject matter.
Yeah.
And when I got the sides for the audition, I remember reading through it and I was going, this is a kid show? Are you kidding?
Like, yeah.
So, you know, it was really heavy subject matter to tackle, and it was so well written. And I was like, well, you know, it's just, you know, it was a challenge. Like, it's, you know, to play this part and not make it so heavy and so depressing, you know, that you don't want to get up from your seat, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. They definitely been amping up the drama just enough and really taking it in the right directions.
Yeah. And that, you know, and that's a sign that the show is really like coming into its own. You know what I mean? Not only can it play to a larger audience, but it can also tackle some bigger issues, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, I think that he's definitely a complex character, and it's not every day that you get a, you know, a kid's show where you're like, oh, I'm going to be in this kid's show, but it's going to be complex, and there's going to be layers here, and it's going to be exciting for an actor.
Yeah, absolutely, man, absolutely.
Yeah. You mentioned not kind of wanting to go too far with the heavy-hitting drama. Is there anything that you did as a personal choice to kind of find that balance between the drama of it and a little bit more of the comedy that's there, or is that more written to the role of the character?
It was definitely in the writing, but that was more, honestly, I mean, like this is one of the biggest challenges I've had for a role, and for that reason, because it was, you know, the subject matter and, you know, what Kermit did to Maya is awful, and, you know, and this scenario is, I mean, for anybody at any point in their life, it's hard to handle, whether you're Maya's age or you're, you know, 40 years old dealing with this with your parents, you know. But that was really like Michael Jacobs, the executive producer, and Joel Zwick, the director, really, really helped me find that line, you know, because I think we danced on both sides of it where, you know, I played it too light and then I was too heavy and then, you know, they kind of helped bring me to a place where it really, you know, fit nicely in the middle.
So you kind of had to, like, hone in exactly where it needed to be.
Yeah. It took a lot of, you know, like I said, it took a lot of dancing on either side of the line to really find that spot.
Yeah. We have our first question from Twitter here from @JustSayinTease. They said, was it hard to play a character that most people hate before even meeting?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. It is always kind of difficult because I've played characters like this that are not very likable, and sometimes you wind up on set and like you find that everybody kind of gravitates away from you, and not because anybody's mean spirited or anything like that, but you know, but for the sake of the role, like it's easier to stay in your role if you just kind of distance yourself from the person, because then when you show up on screen or on set, then you know. You already kind of naturally have this like alienation towards that character, you know. But everybody at Girl Meets World, from the second I walked in the door, whether that was the person like security letting me in, or you know, when I was on set working with everybody, was so nice and welcoming and like friendly that I didn't feel that way at all. No,
that's great.
How about the audience? Like, what was the kind of the audience reaction? Like, did you get booed right then? I mean, because it's hard for the audience of a live taping to kind of separate sort of the character role from the person who's playing it.
Sure, sure. No, I didn't get booed. But, the feeling in the air is definitely palpable when you're, you know, when your character is the reason that one of their favorite characters is crying. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that feeling is definitely there, but I didn't get booed or anything.
That's good.
Because the Girl Meets World audience is a very emotional audience, I wonder.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Sort of continuing with this idea of the coming in as a sort of maybe potentially villainous character, were you trying to play it so that it could be sort of sympathetic? Do you want people to sort of connect with him? Do you think of him as a villain? Do you sympathize with him? What do you...
Well, I mean, I guess that depends on which me is looking at him. I mean, you know, from a personal standpoint, thinking about what he did, yeah, I mean, that's pretty, it's just about the worst thing you can do to a kid, you know what I mean? Just not be there. Like, that's absolutely awful. But as a, you know, as an actor playing the role, you know, you can't think of your own character as villainous, because really, even a bad, even people who do terrible things don't think of themselves as, you know, I'm a bad person or I'm a villain. You know what I mean? They have reasons for doing what they did, however convoluted and messed up that might be. You know what I mean? Like, they don't think they're villains. So, you know, as an actor, you know, you have to not sympathize, but I have to understand why Kermit did what he did. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it right by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, I have to understand it and not think of it as villainous. So.
And on the line of villainy, this is the most important question of the night. What is your favorite Batman villain?
Oh, man. I might have answered differently at one point, but after seeing Heath Ledger's Joker, like, I don't know I will ever go back to anything else.
Very good answer.
Just so good.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so sort of switching gears a little bit. At StarWarder5 wants to be have it clarified. Is it Kermit Clutterbucket or is it Kermit Hart?
Are you at liberty to say? Or is it gonna be a twist?
I honestly don't know. I mean, I know it's listed on most, like, I think on IMDb and everything as Clutterbucket.
Mm.
I don't know that I ever got the definitive answer to that when I was on set.
So your script didn't say on the top, like, either way?
No, it just said Kermit.
The mystery continues.
hopefully that will be, at some point in the future, will be clarified.
So along those lines, do you have anything more comprehensive backstory for the character more than what the audience was shown? Like, are you privy to some information that, like, we don't know that might be better at explaining, like, what actually happened? Or is that...
Yeah, because we were reading a lot of subtext going on, and we weren't sure if we were overly reading into things or...
This is one of those gray areas where I don't know what I can say and what I can't.
Yeah.
However,
Which means you know something.
I did get some information from the writers and from Joel and from Michael, and I don't know how much of that was just
as an actor.
For me as an actor, for direction, and how much of that was actual story.
Yeah.
And I don't want to, like, say something that's going to lead people in the wrong direction and think, oh, well, this is, the way things are going.
I don't want to give
any false information, because I think most of what the information that I got was for myself as an actor to work with. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. And that's something that could sort of change if they move on.
Oh, of course. They could decide, they want to change the backstory to this and, you know, add this. So who knows?
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll find out at some point in the future. Yeah.
So at @Massalanian_ says, how much did you watch / know about Boy Meets World before getting the role of Kermit? And also at Maya Love Powell after a very similar thing.
Mm.
Yeah.
About Boy Meets World?
Yeah, because you mentioned that you had watched it.
Oh, yeah.
Diehard fan? Watching, or?
What year did Boy Meets World start?
93?
Sounds right.
93, okay, yeah. So when Boy Meets World first started, I was a young teenager and
full of angst.
I was at that age where it wasn't cool to watch Boy Meets World, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I should be watching more R-rated, you know, like watching Freddy's Jason on the whatever, but
Stumpy's Revenge.
But I would come home and I would watch it every week with my sister, and the show was fantastic and the writing was great. And I didn't get a chance to watch, like, rewatch any of Boy Meets World before Girl Meets World started, and I watched probably when I got the audition for Girl Meets World, I probably watched the first 5 episodes.
That was a bad decision.
Well, just to get the tone of the show,
yeah.
You know, and
Unfortunately, that isn't the tone of the show. It's grown up a lot.
obviously. But, you know, just, you know, and just to know who the characters were.
Yeah, definitely.
Get a little bit of the tone of the show. And like, you know, like I said, that I got an episode where the tone of the show completely shifted to something much greater. So not that that gave me, like you said, not that that gave me the best understanding of the tone of the show. But,
but I mean, Girl Meets Father was in those first five, and that's certainly applicable to your character.
Yeah, absolutely.
You were talking about, so you did watch Boy Meets World, so you obviously must have some favorite characters or things that you were drawing maybe from way back when to bring into Girl Meets World, or is that more you just took all the direction from the current, you know, state of affairs?
I would probably say current state of affairs since it's been so long since I've seen Boy Meets World, but, you know, who knows? I might have been subconsciously drawing on some of, like Sean's parents' relationship or something, but... I'm basing this on that. And a lot of it would be like, if I went back and watched those before I did this episode, then a lot of that is going to influence what I'm doing as opposed to letting...
You be you.
let Maya's father kind of develop independently. Because, you know, I'm sure if they intended to have a direct parallel or a direct correlation with Boy Meets World, then it would have been written specifically in there for me to use. You know what I mean? They're very cognizant of what's happening. You know, the parallels between both shows. So.
Yeah, I mean, when the show started, especially before a lot of the characters totally came into their own, there was a lot of talk about, like, this person is the new version of this person, and I can see where you wouldn't want to just be like the new Chet. You want to be your character,
And that has really been one of the most interesting and also dangerous dynamics of Girl Meets World thus far, is how much it is drawing off of the old universe and, like, the old legacy and like, what can be its own thing. Because one of the problems we had early on was things that are too parallel, not parallel enough. And it's only really until more recently that the show has kind of gotten enough meat of itself to actually do what it needs to do.
Yeah, absolutely, and that, you know, like, and like you were saying, or your question earlier about your favorite Batman villain, like, Heath Ledger did he didn't
copy Jack Nicholson,
and Jack was, I guess, insulted that he didn't call and consult with him about the Joker, but, you know, he had to make it his own thing, and he didn't want to, you know, he did that with smashing success.
For me, it's still Hamill, though.
right, Mr. Hamill.
Yes. At GMW Buzz says, were there a lot of outtakes or bloopers from the cheesecake scene?
You know, they did a great job staging that, where we practiced a lot without the cheesecake. because time concerns, because in order to clean it all up, reset everything and do it again, it would just take a while. So there were lots of discussions about consistency of cheesecake.
I hear it's a great conditioner.
It is. It actually moisturizes pretty well. But, you know, they didn't want the cheesecake to fall apart in her hand before she smashed it in my face and all that stuff. So we actually only did the cheesecake in the face once.
Yeah. That's perfection right there.
But, I did have lots of stale muffins thrown at thrown at my head. Yeah. We did that quite a few times without the cheesecake.
Now, why did they have to be stale? Was that so that they didn't break, or is that just?
I'm guessing because they bounce off me better. Yeah.
I feel you on this, because I was a filmmaker in college and I made a horror film where there was a lot of fights and water and stuff. And so like, you can't get wet until we're actually doing this. So a lot of one take.
Are you sure you use stale muffins?
Yeah.
And then, of course, the water doesn't do what you want it to do. You dry everyone off.
Good stuff.
Well, it's like that scene in The Shining where the blood's running down the hallway. Didn't that take like some ridiculously like years to set up, and then they did it in one take? Isn't that the story?
So can you tell us a little bit about working with the rest of the cast? How was it playing a father for the first time? Stuff like that.
The father for the first time was cool. Like, you know, you get the sides and you're like, oh wait, I'm too young to, but the cast was like I mentioned earlier, they were so friendly and welcoming, and to be surrounded, you know, with that level of talent on every level from all of those guys, they're so good. And, you know, to be welcomed in like family and treated like that was, you know, it's, it's conducive to a really, you know, productive work atmosphere, you know?
Yeah, was it a little surreal for you, like, working yes. with Danielle Fishel and Ben Savage and people?
Yeah, you know, I got the part, I called my sister, because since we used to watch Boy Meets World all the time together, and her response was like a 20-second long scream. but yeah, it was a little surreal when, you know, get to set and talking with Ben and Danielle in between takes and stuff, and being like, wow, this is crazy.
To the point that you were getting autographs, or
no, I tried not to be that person.
Yes. On set.
But I should have.
Yeah. So now you're kicking yourself that you did it.
Exactly. Christmas presents all around.
There you go. You're talking a little bit about like the friendly atmosphere versus the kind of alienation that you need to maintain the role. So did you do anything both to connect or to stay away from Sabrina to really prepare for that climactic scene, or like to get that chemistry of the estranged father? I mean, was it more of a preparation, or was it more of a lack of contact? Did any of those things have any influence on that scene?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of all of the above, you know. With Sabrina and I, we talk, as well as, you know, the two of us with Michael and with Joel, and just, you know, we worked out the dynamics of everything. And then, you know, when it would come time to really hit that last scene that was so emotional, like, you know, we had talked about it and we had done all the groundwork, but then, you know, before it happens, we would just kind of naturally not be near each other for a while. You know what I mean?
So you had to maintain that tension a little bit.
Yeah. And, you know, and that seems like that take a little bit of, you know, mental preparation where you need to be alone for a second to kind of get your head in the space that it needs to be. And then you don't want to kind of interrupt that by being like, oh, hey, can I get you a coffee? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, you don't want to like crack a smile or something. Yeah.
Yeah. You got to kind of separate yourself a little bit. So we would just kind of naturally like not be near each other for a bit.
Yeah.
And that's just something you guys just did. It wasn't like MJ was like, all right, don't talk to each other, separate trailers.
No, we just kind of, you know.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
Keith, you want to ask your other silly question?
I don't remember
which one. About Sabrina Carpenter?
Which one this time?
about have you listened to any of her music and do you have any favorite songs?
Oh, yeah, man.
Did you delete that from this?
No, it's still on there.
Her music's fantastic. She's got such a soulful voice for such a young girl. Like,
yeah.
She's really impressed. I mean, I think of her album stuff, like Eyes Wide Open, I get the title track, probably my favorite. But the stuff that I really like is there's some stuff on YouTube.
Yeah.
There's like a backyard porch concert thing where she does a couple of covers that How to Be a Heartbreaker cover she did is outstanding. Yeah. Like, so good.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Her acoustic covers, and there's a lot of ones outside or just like in a room somewhere.
With her sister.
Those duets with her sister that are just acoustic are great.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think, that was like 4 or 5 seconds, the cover her and her sister did.
Yeah.
That one's great. Heartbreaker out that was my favorite, I think.
I was really impressed also with her Adele cover recently. I was like, man, she can sing very well.
Oh, I'll have to check that out. Yeah.
At Mr. Singleton 16 says, do you feel your time with Maya in the episode was rushed at all? Did you feel like you wanted even more time with her? Did you feel like it?
I mean, rushed in the sense of like
character development and like, do you think that you had enough time to play out that in the episode? You know what I mean? Or did you feel like as a character, more needed to be shown right off the bat? Or you think it was good to just leave it be for now?
Well, I will say, I think we need at least 5 or 6 more episodes. No, I mean, the way it was written, you know, I think Kermit, it was kind of designed to feel a little rushed in terms of like, you know, Kermit is not the guy who's good with feelings.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know what I mean? He's not the guy that's going to open up and ask you how your day was and how's it going with everything. He just kind of flies by the seat of his pants and, you know, and I think that last scene maybe either feels a little rushed or came across that way or, because, you know, Kermit comes back and he's like, I got something I got to say to you. I'm not good at this.
Yeah.
Let me get this out there so that I can, you know, say what I need to say, you know? And so I feel like it was more like, you know, his kind of emotional vomit of, you know, Oh God, you know, I'm sorry.
So like the brisk kind
not
of
good at this. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, the tempestuous like, kind of quick stuff is like it's designed in the character. That's what needed to happen.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. And you know, and Maya's the one who has to take her time with it because it's much more difficult for her. And I think you know. You know, Kermit was a little rushed, but that's just the way he deals with, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and one thing that I really loved with the episode, and that I had been nervous about going in, but was very happy with once I had saw it, was I was nervous that she was going to forgive Kermit this, like, very quickly. And the fact that she made that first step of forgiving herself but not forgiving him, I thought was a really great, smart move to go.
Yeah, really, really great writing. I mean, that's, you know, if she had just forgiven him, that's such, like, it's such the easy way out, you know, and it also doesn't allow for any other, like, growth, really, you know? It's like, okay, I forgive you. And then it's like, well, okay, well, where do we go from here? You know, that was a little too
easy. That has been one of the struggles of the show, you know, earlier on, is too clean of a resolution. Everything is just happy just because, you know? And they're really starting to reconsider that approach and figure that things that are messy are more sincere, and that's a great way to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're speaking of you want him to come back 5 or 6 more episodes. Do you know if you're coming back for the next season? Are you allowed to say?
I don't know if I would be allowed to say if I did know, but I really have no idea.
Okay. you know, or they, so you they say. Had,
there was talk about it, but there was nothing like nothing concrete or nothing like, oh, we're definitely having you back or anything like
that. It's in the works, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I hope so. I mean, I would like to think so.
I mean, I feel like we definitely need more from him. We need to figure out what's up with his other kids and all that stuff. I think there's a lot more groundwork for your future.
There's definitely a lot of potential there, for sure. Yeah.
And maybe we can have you back and when that happens.
That would be great, man. That'd be great.
All right, anything else you want to talk about as far as, like, you talked a little bit working with the live audience, they didn't boo you, thankfully. and do you get any feedback after the episode aired, either on Twitter or anything like that you found interesting?
I mean, yeah, there was a lot of people, or a couple of people, especially there was one, it was a lady who was watching it with her kids, and, you know, just the emotional response from some people who had gone through something similar, and, like, you know, I don't remember exactly what her story was, but something like this had happened to her, and it was like she had never really addressed these issues, and when she was watching it with her kids, she had to leave the room because she was, you know, like really pushed those buttons, and it's like those kind of things always really, really hit home with me. Like, you know, it's and that's one of the reasons, like, why storytelling in any form is so great. It's like we remind each other that, you know, nobody's alone, you know what I mean? Like, no matter what you've gone through or what's happening to you right now and how bad it may seem and how hard it is to pick yourself up off the floor, like, somebody else is going through exactly the same thing, and it's, you know, and having just as hard of a time, but you're not alone, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what Girl Meets World has been doing right, you know, is even if it doesn't give you the solution, it's talking about it and saying it's okay to talk about it, and that's, you know, one of the things that needs to be put out there.
And I have a very close friend who's almost in exactly the same position as Maya, where her dad left at a very young age, and now he has new kids that she just, like, saw on Facebook, didn't even know existed, and, I mean, I was telling her about the episode, and she was just so glad that this was something that shows would actually talk about and that kids like her would be able to see. So I think it's great.
It is great, and it's, you know, it's important to have, you know, we do need some shows that are just for entertainment where we want to, you know, tune in and tune out, you know, but it's nice to have a, you know, we also need this even more, that, you know, where you have, you know, it's entertaining, but, you know, it does open you up to, you know, the things that really matter and make you think about things, you know.
Definitely,
much like Sabrina Carpenter's acclaimed album Eyes Wide Open.
That was unintentional, but yes.
I don't know. I'm getting some Illuminati kind of vibes.
Hey,
it's working out a little too well. So at this point in the interview, we'd like to kind of turn it over to you and just, is there anything that you want to talk about, any projects you're working on, have worked on, any causes you want to endorse, anything, just, you know, anything you want to add to us, just floor is yours. The responsibility is yours.
Oh man, too much pressure. Enough coffee. there's a World War II movie that I'm in right now that's out on DVD and video on demand that I'm pretty proud of. That
cool.
It's called Return to the Hiding Place. Huh. It's about the Nazi occupation of the Netherlands during World War II and how the the students at the time helped smuggle the Jews out of the country into safety. So,
wow.
Really proud of that project. And
what kind of character are you playing in that?
One of the lead students who helped work in this Dutch watch shop and help smuggle people out of the country. And it's a really cool story, really cool, uplifting story.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah, sounds really great.
And then there's another film coming out next year that should be in the festival circuit for a little bit before it's released. But I got to play the villain in a Western.
Ooh. Oh, cool.
Like, if that hasn't been almost every kid's childhood dream.
So did you have to grow a handlebar mustache and dye it black?
I mean, I did my best on the mustache front. Mustache growing is not my forte, but I did grow the best one possible, and I did get to twist it one or two times. Exciting.
That was a prerequisite.
Yes. When I got to do some cool stunts, and I got to do a lot of work with, like, you know, the old pistols and stuff, which was really nice. Fun.
Which had a black handle.
Yes.
So what's the name of that project?
That one was called Cassidy Red.
Cool. Sounds cool.
Got a good there's a good strong female lead character that kind of drives the movie, and I'm her like evil counterpart, which is really cool.
Cool. That sounds really fun.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Anything else? Or?
I don't know. Not really tied to any other organizations that I feel like I need to.
Except like for the ones you don't want to talk about.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
I mean, I was looking through some of your IMDb stuff. Seems like you've been like a couple different horror movies and things. Any of your old projects that you think people could check out?
I'm not think about that before I say anything. I'm not going to go back and look at it now.
What Dan is really getting at is that he wants to produce a horror film, and he's interested if you want to play a part
horror film
as the mustachioed villain.
Absolutely.
Okay. Confirmed.
Oh, horror films are so much fun, man. I like grew up in that golden era of horror movies. You know? I'm always kind of a sucker for a good horror movie.
Yeah, me too. Definitely.
So look out for that casting call.
Yes. Anytime.
All right, I think that's pretty much it, unless you have anything else.
I think I'm good, man.
Either of us. Do you have anything else?
Appreciate you guys having me on.
Oh, yeah. This was great. I'm really glad this worked out.
Yeah, thank you so much, Dave, for being on
here. Absolutely, guys. Absolutely.
And for our listeners, so obviously Girl Meets New Year's came out this week, and we are going to do a mini podcast that might come out a little bit later because we're focusing on the interview, but look out for that. It should be coming soon. And thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you for being on, David. And we'll see you next time.
Well, let's have them get in on this closing.
Okay, so
we do this thing at the end of our episodes where in the final episode of Boy Meets World where they do, you know, the class dismissed, the dream try, do good, class dismissed, and we all go around in a circle. So we wonder, if I didn't just rip out my headphones like a jerk.
Careful.
We were wondering if you'd like to participate in our little closing ceremony.
I would say dream, Keith would say try, and then you'd say do good, and then we all say class dismissed.
Do good and class dismissed. You got it.
Yes. Yeah, all right. Thank you guys for listening, and as always, dream,
try,
do good,
class dismissed. There we go. Thank you for being
fantastic.
A part of our Kagawi Nation, our special community here.
Thank you so much for being on. This is great.
Awesome, guys. Thank you so much for having me.